I don't want to date myself, but when I was growing up, one of the popular cartoons on television was G.I. Joe. Is that still like a known thing? People don't know it?
They have a spin-off version now, but no name to call.
So there was a thing, now you know. This was like a phrase that they had. Now you know, and knowing is half the battle. Knowing is half the battle. That was the phrase we grew up with. The virtue of knowing is that knowing was half the battle. When you ask a person, what does it mean to know something? They begin to fumfret around with their words. You know, like if you know it. You say, define it for me. How do you know when you know something? What does it mean to know something? What are the benefits of knowing? What does it mean that knowing is half the battle? There's a very interesting thing that we see in the Torah. The pasuk says in Bereishis that Adam knew Chava. What does it mean that Adam knew Chava? It meant that they had children. In a very simple way, people say it's a euphemism. Obviously, the Torah doesn't use euphemisms. When the Torah says a word, it means that that's the real definition of the word. So when the Torah says that Adam knew Chava, and therefore they had children, it means that knowing represents the truest form of joining. It's not the pshat that the Torah didn't want to use a not nice word, so it said a nicer word. They knew each other. The Torah doesn't stam say narishkeit. The Torah doesn't say stupidities. When the Torah says that they knew something, it really means it. There was a very deep knowledge there. And that knowledge bred an intimacy, a connection between Adam and Chava. We see this in the Torah when it comes to the Rabbani Shalom also. V'yadata es Hashem. We should know God. What does it mean to know the Rabbani Shalom? It means that our job is to join, to become intimate with Hashem. As I've told you guys many, many times this year already, the word religion in Latin means relationship. V'yadata es Hashem means that we have to engage in an intimate relationship with the Rabbani Shalom. The truth of the matter is that every single activity that a person does is geared towards bringing that thing together with him. So whether it's talking to another person, communication, even negative communication brings people together. Right? If you really love somebody and they upset you, what do? You may not communicate effectively, but you talk to them. If you don't talk to them, what are you saying? I want nothing to do with you. Anytime you engage, ever in the world, you are joining together with that thing. And that could be a person, or it could be a subject, or it could be a thing. Lamashal, how do people speak when they talk about their sports team? They say, "We won." How did you win? The players on the court, I understand that they won. The players on the field, it makes sense that they won. How did you win? What do you mean? It's my team. How is it your team? Well, I invested. I watched their games. I'm a fan. I read the articles in the newspaper. I went to some of the games. They were on my fantasy team. Whatever it is, but everything that we do joins together with another. This is why, in a very strange way, we develop an emotional attachment to players that have nothing to do with us. I imagine that there will be a number of Yankee fans. Adam, I'm not just saying this because you're in the room. But on the day of Derek Jeter's last game in Yankee Stadium, I imagine it's going to be a very emotional crowd. You have tickets to that game? I imagine it's going to be a very emotional crowd. I remember he telling me that when Cal Ripken Jr.'s streak ended and he did his lap around the stadium, that this person was telling me that they were in tears. What are they crying about? They literally did nothing. Cal Ripken Jr., he did something. Why are you crying? The answer is because they have joined in a certain way with Cal Ripken Jr. They have joined with Derek Jeter. Therefore, it's incumbent upon us to choose what we want to join with, because every single thing that we do joins with another. Every single thing that we do in this world joins with another. Lamashal, a person works for a company. They work for a company for 35 years. And then it comes time for them to retire. It's a very sad day. Why is that a sad day? They have enough money to retire. They don't need the money anymore. They put away, they have a 401k, they did everything they need to do. They've invested in the stock market. Why is this a sad day? It's not a sad day. The reason is because they've identified themselves with the company. And they talk like that. We just landed a big account. Your team landed the account? No, no, no. My company. Your company? You're the president? You're the CEO? No, you know what I mean. What do you mean? What you mean is that you invested in it and you joined it. But there are different levels of joining something. Sometimes you join something with your actions. Sometimes you join something with your communication. Sometimes you join something with your thoughts alone. And here's the thing. You might think that action breeds the greatest joining. After all, I'm doing something. You might think that speech creates a joining. Yeah, we talk all the time. The truth of the matter is that the highest level of joining, the highest level of intimacy that you can achieve with another, is machshava. It's when I know you. I might not have spoken to you. I might not even have ever done anything for you. But the knowledge alone creates a tremendous, tremendous joining. We say in philosophy, Ilu yadativ ha'yisif. If we would know God, then we would be He. What's the simple explanation of that? It's impossible to know God. Who's the only person that could know God? But in a deeper level, perhaps what it means is the more that you know God, the more that you become godly. The more that you join with Him. The more dveikus there is. This needs to be a radically new understanding than anything you've ever had before when it comes to Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah has an aspect of it that is tachlis oriented. I learn Torah so that I can know what Hashem wants from me. That's true. But there is a much deeper, much more profound, much more meaningful understanding of Talmud Torah. And that's the more I learn, the more I become joined with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ilu yadativ hayisiv. The more I can know God, and we're going to see what it means to know God through the Torah, but the more I know Him, the more I can become joined with Him. So a person who says, I'm joined with the Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm in a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, but they're an Am Haaretz, it's not possible for them to be a chassid. And that's what Chazal mean when they say, Ein Am Haaretz chassid. If you don't know God, how could you be a chassid? What it means to be a chassid is to live with the Ribbono Shel Olam. For example, what does it mean to live lifnim mishuras hadin? How do you live before the din? What's before the din? Nothing is before the din. The answer is that when you're living lifnim mishuras hadin, you're looking at not the commandment, but at the commander. Not at the mitzvah, but of the mitzvah. But if I'm not focused on the mitzvah, if I don't know the mitzvah, then how could I be living with Him? This is the difference between religious and observant. Observant is a state of being where I'm doing. And there's a lot of value to that. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam put us here for a mission, and when you do the mitzvah, so you're doing the mission. But that's not living at the highest level. That's not living the life of a chassid. The life of a chassid is geared not only toward commandment, but in terms of living with the commander, so that everything that I do in my yadus has this symbiotic thread that runs through it. And now I'm not just performing a mitzvah, but I'm engaged in a relationship. Let me give you an example. There are some husbands that when their wife tells them to take out the garbage, they take out the garbage. How do they feel in that moment when they're taking out the garbage? They might feel resentful. I was in the middle of doing whatever I'm doing and now I have to take out the garbage. They might feel annoyed. They might feel nothing, whatever, I have to take out the garbage. There are those husbands that don't even need to be asked. They know that that's what their wife wants from them. And now the activity of taking out the garbage is not simply to remove garbage from the home, but the activity, because you're in an intimate understanding of what your wife wants, the activity itself takes on a whole new value system. It has new virtue. I'm not just taking out the garbage. I'm being for her. I'm living in the way that it's good for her. And that brings me closer to her. So the knowledge of her is now something that permeates every fiber of my being. What happens when you merge with another? When you merge with another, you always create something new. Life is seen when it produces a life that it can in turn create another life. So Rivka Imenu said, if I can't have a child, then I am dead. What does that mean, if I can't have a child, then I'm dead? You mean to say, if I don't have a child, then I'm going to die, I'm going to take my life. No. She said, if I can't have a child, then I am dead. What does that mean? It means that if she can't have a child, if she can't produce life, then her life has revealed itself that it's not life. The symptom of life is that it can create more life. So whenever you have two people coming together, what always happens? Now my life has been enhanced. What's the nature now of life? It's going to produce a new life. So this is why when a couple get married and they join together, and we'll see why they have to get married in order to join together. This is why when a couple gets married and they know each other, what's the result? I have a child. Because when my life is enhanced by you, and now our lives have joined together, something new is created. And this is the way it works in all relationships. If I join a company, well now my job in terms of merging with that company is to create a new product. The job is not simply to do what already is. The job is always to bring something out. This is why the most critical use of parenting is that the parents present a front to their child. Because the nature of the parents must be that they're joined together. Otherwise, the child doesn't know where he fits. And sometimes when I talk to guys, they always tell me, yeah, about this I'm going to speak to my mom. Or about this I'm going to speak to my dad. Why? Because they know that their parents aren't united. And it creates a situation for the child that even though sometimes it creates a manipulative quality, but really it creates a tremendous amount of unsafety for a child. There's a tremendous lack of safety when a child is living in a home and he knows that the parents don't see eye to eye on his parenting. And even though there's an aspect of it that's comfortable for the child because he can manipulate the situation to be what he wants, but the child would much rather have the united front of his parents. Because the unity of the parents creates safety for the child. Because the child is a product of the joining of the parents. This is why divorce is so painful for a child. And even though if you talk to children of divorce, what do they say? Yeah, it's great. I get double presents. Yeah? Or I had one Talmud who once said to me, yeah, it's great. Nobody ever says no to me. Nobody ever says no to me. Because I know that if my mom says no, my dad will say yes. So all I have to do is get my mother to say no so that I can get my father to say yes, and then I got a yes. Or my father says no, then my mom is going to say yes. But never would both of his parents say no, because they need to fight with each other. Since they need to fight with each other, the child is always going to get what he wants. And that is very not safe for a child. In fact, a child wants to know that he's not always going to get what he wants. The child wants the parents to tell him, this is not good for you. Of course, as we get older, we need independence, right? Dependence, then independence breeds interdependence. But what we always need from our parents is we need boundaries. So that even as teenagers, when our parents are giving us more independence, it would be foolish for a parent to give us total independence. There was a unfortunate story about a parent that owned a car company, and their child, their teenage child, kept getting into car accidents. And the father who owned this car company kept giving brand new cars to his child as his child was wrecking the cars. Until one day the child got into a fatal accident. And I remember, nobody was judging. But I remember that it became like a part of the conversation, the parenting conversation of setting boundaries for your children. And that even though we need to give them independence, they also need to have dependence at the same time. They need to depend on the fact that the parents are going to present a unified front to the child. And that's what a child gets tremendous pleasure from. When he sees his parents and they're acting as one, that's very safe. That's very pleasurable for a child. When two people get divorced, the entire existence of the child now comes into question. What does that say about me? That's what's painful about divorce. Where do I stand now? I don't know where I am. Lo aleinu, we should never know from such things, but today we know that divorce is becoming more and more prominent. The divorce rate is above 50% now. The entire institution of marriage is in doubt, is in question. And children are nebuch being born to families where they don't feel like they have a place. Let's take a classic example of knowing and joining from what it means to be husband and wife. What happens if, chas v'shalom, the husband cheats on the wife? What one of the things that you may hear out of the wife's mouth when she finds out about this is she might say to the husband, go away from me, I don't even know you anymore. When something strange happens, when something out of the ordinary happens, something that she never expected, what does she say? I don't feel like I know you anymore. You hear those words? I don't feel like I know you anymore. What does feeling have to do with knowledge? I don't feel like I know you. The answer is that knowledge, because it creates joining, creates the feeling, the emotion of intimacy with another. So when somebody does something that I didn't ever conceive that they could do, I can't imagine, I never in my wildest dreams imagined that you could do that to me, my emotional reality has now shifted. I don't feel like I know you anymore. The feeling of intimacy, the feeling of closeness that I once had with you is now gone. I don't know who you are. Or if, Rahmanul Islan, a child becomes addicted to drugs or to drinking, one of the things that people will say to him is, dude, I don't even know you anymore. What are they saying? They're saying the way that you are behaving, it's created a distance between you and me. And not a healthy distance, not a distance that creates a bittul and a surrender that creates intimacy, but a distance of, I don't even know who you are. Perhaps the most painful thing that one spouse can say to another spouse, that a brother can say to a sister, that a friend can say to a friend, that a parent can say to a child, or a child could say to the parent, is, I don't even know you anymore. Because what they're really saying is, I don't even see the possibility for a relationship. So when we talk about knowing, and we talk about not knowing is half the battle, what that means to say is, knowing is the beginning of intimacy. If I know you, that means that we can join together. If I don't know you, it means that we can't join together. So what I want to talk about over the next couple of minutes is, how do we go, in a very practical way, how do we build knowledge of something? So we know that knowledge has three steps to it. There's chachma, there's bina, and there's das. I'm going to go through each one, and I'm going to show you how chachma, bina, and das build a relationship. That if you'll have chachma, bina, and das about the Ribbono Shel Olam, it is the beginning of a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And of not just of any relationship, but of the most intimate relationship with Hashem. So let's talk about chachma. Chachma is the excitement of discovery. True intellectuals love discovery. In fact, true intellectuals will tell you that there is no geschmack, there is no excitement, there's no energy like the moment you discovered something. And in fact, what do you see? I mean, I'm sure this is how they portray it in the movies, but this is how you see something empirically, right? When somebody is digging for days and they're searching for something, and all of a sudden that shovel hits something difficult, what's the emotion that people feel? This is it. This is it. Right? A person has been discovering, they built a brand new telescope and they're searching for things in the universe, and they find a new solar system, or they find a new way in which the universe is expanding. What's the emotion that they have? The emotion that they have is excitement. Because getting to know something, or getting to know someone, is an exciting prospect. I can join together with another, and that means that I've transcended my own boundaries. See, the human being, by his definition, he doesn't want to be stuck in this body. He doesn't want to believe that this is all that he is. Everything that we do is about transcending, this is just myself. Some people will run after the counterfeit of transcendence, which is just to transcend their physical limitations. So, I used to be able only to jump this high, now I can jump this high, right? I used to be able to type 50 words a minute, now I'm the best typist in the world, I can type 150 words a minute. They're trying to transcend themselves, but they're not actually transcending anything meaningful. Just their physical limitations, and even that is only short-lived. More whole people try to transcend themselves by connecting with meaningful things and meaningful people. This is the reason why when we first get involved in a relationship, the nature of the relationship is exciting. It's because I've discovered you. And that's why sometimes, even if, let's say, you knew someone your entire life, and then all of a sudden, one summer in camp, somebody sets you up with that person in a halachically acceptable way. Now what happens? There's an excitement. What's the excitement? You knew this girl your whole life. You grew up next door to her. What's the excitement? The excitement is that there's been a discovery. The girl that I thought was just the girl next door, turns out she's not the girl next door. There's a tremendous excitement. In this initial stage of understanding, which is called discovery, there's a very exciting prospect. But in order for this to happen, what do you need to do? You need slowly, not fast, slowly, to be able to step out of yourself just a little bit. So for example, in order to allow another in, what do I need? I need to create a space within myself where I could discover another. I need to open myself up to a new possibility. Which is why, when does discovery happen? When people stop thinking about the way that things have always been thought. It's always been understood that the world revolved like this. Now we see, let's open ourselves to a whole new possibility. Let's question the entire thing. What comes from that? Often, incredible discovery. So I need to pull back myself, the way I've always seen things, the way I've always thought about things, in order to allow myself the excitement of discovery. I need to be able to recognize that there's another. So for example, a child only knows one thing. It's a very unholy state. The child only knows his own existence. He's totally isolated. And there is a difference between isolated and alone. Alone can be a very powerful state. Even lonely can be a very powerful state. Isolated is a very unholy state. The child is totally isolated. All he knows is his needs. The child is the very definition of narcissism. I need my changed. I need to be fed. And so I will scream and cry until somebody does for me what I need. That's a very unholy state. The child, in his world of discovery, begins his world of discovery once he starts seeing other things. And that's why one of the most incredible things as a parent is to watch your child discover the world. And that's one of the biggest brachos that you can have for your children. As you see your children crawling around and gazing up at things and start to notice things, it's exciting. It's exciting for us as parents because we see our child and he's starting to move from that unholy state of isolation into the state of recognizing that he's a part of a community. Watch a grandfather play with his grandchild when the grandchild begins to recognize the grandfather. The nachas that the grandfather gets is beyond description. And if you see a grandfather with his grandchild holding his grandchild in front of him and he's just making faces and the grandchild starts to laugh and he thinks that his grandfather is so funny, how does the grandfather feel? The grandfather feels like $1 million. Why? What does that little baby know about the grandfather? Nothing. But the excitement that the grandfather gets is because that child has now included me in his community. And since it was my life that ultimately resulted in this grandchild's life, I feel intimately connected with that child. And as the child begins to discover me in return, now there's a relationship. Or at least the germ, the budding of a relationship. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for example, always knew us. It was his life that gave birth to us to begin with, so to speak. But when we engage in the chachma and the excitement of the discovery of Hashem, think about how excited, of course we know how exciting it is for us. Think about how exciting it is for Hashem. The feeling, so to speak, that Hashem gets is beyond imagination. Because when Hashem feels, he really feels. And when we begin to discover him, when we stop living that narcissistic life, that unholy life of isolation, and we're able to remove the sunglasses of our own myopic sense of the world, and see that it's not just what we want, but that there's another that exists out there, that's very exciting both for us and for the Rabbeinu Shlomo. So the exclusivity of me is now dissolved. And the only question is, what will I do with you? And then we enter into stage two. Stage two is called Bina. Bina means the development of what I've discovered. I discovered something, but I don't yet know what it is. I've discovered that there's a new possibility. I've begun to see it. But when you talk to people of discovery, when you talk to scientists, intellectuals, philosophers, inventors, what will they tell you? But this could be yet. We've just begun to uncover the possibilities. Well, what does that mean? Did you discover it or not? If you discover it, then you know it. No. Just because I've discovered something doesn't mean that I know it yet. In Bina, now I've developed the structure of what it is that I've discovered. And I start to understand all the possibilities and the interconnections that it can exist in this discovery. Discovered, for example, the possibility to have an indoor GPS. What would that mean for me? Some people will look at that and they'll see a commercial use for it. An indoor GPS, that means that we could shop anywhere and we could just look at our phones with our indoor GPS. We'll never have to search for an item in a store again. You'll never have to go up and down the aisles. You can simply look at your phone and the indoor GPS will tell you where you are. If I'm in a mall, I'll never have to look for a store. Others, with the concept of an indoor GPS, might be able to plumb new depths of the sea. Yet others will be able to use it for military purposes. Philosophers might understand it in their way. But we don't yet know all the possibilities. That's what's so terrifying sometimes about when we discover something that has a tremendous amount of danger. Like when we discovered the possibility for an atomic bomb. We didn't know, and we still don't know, what that means for the future of humanity. We know that one time or two times it meant the destruction of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which may or may not have been necessary depending on which historians you read. But what does that mean for all of humanity? Well, think about the escalation that exists. Get nuclear capability or will they not? North Korea with it. What happens when a maniac has control of that button? Sometimes we've discovered something and maybe we've even brought it into, we don't yet know what it is. We don't know all of the different possibilities. On a positive note, necessity is the mother of invention. So some of the greatest inventions of our time have come, for example, through the space program, which has basically now become defunct. But it used to be that because in space they needed certain things, like Velcro, for example, that's how we got Velcro. But when they invented Velcro in space, they didn't yet understand that Velcro would become something that almost everybody would use in their lives. Or when they invented the microwave in space, they didn't realize that eventually that was going to become a standard object in everybody's kitchen. When the Israeli army needed to figure out how to send messages without talking, they developed text messaging. They were the ones that invented text messaging. Did they know then that that was going to revolutionize all of communication? That none of you guys were going to be able to talk to each other anymore, but that you're all just going to text back and forth? The precursor to Facebook and to Twitter and to Instagram and to Snapchat and to Glide and all of these things? No, they didn't possibly know. In Bina, you see the development of the structure. Now, if Chachma came about because I moved myself back a little bit, Bina comes about because I've taken myself out of the picture much, much more. And that's why Bina is a very vulnerable state. Because in Bina, I don't yet know what this could be. I don't know how this is going to work out. The process of discovery, the process of understanding the structure, requires me to totally pull myself out. Because who knows what this can be? This is why women have an added measure of Bina, because it's the woman that's able to create in a real way much more than a man, which is why behind every great man, there's an even greater woman. Because a man often has these very exciting ideas that they think are going to change the world. And what happens when a husband tells his wife, "I've got this great idea"? What role often does the wife play? "I don't know if it's going to work because of X, Y, and Z." He's playing the role of Chachma. She's playing the role of Bina. Let's see how this actually works. Let's discover it. It's a very vulnerable position, Bina, because the excitement of Chachma wants to overpower Bina, and yet Bina needs to be there saying, "Hey, slow down. Let's see the development of this idea." So Bina is the surrender that creates the space for the development of the idea. But in Bina, there's still two people. There's me and the idea. And though I've pulled myself back much more than in Chachma, There's still two people. There's still I and you. Das is where the knowledge and the knower become one. So, for example, if I were to ask you what 1 + 1 is, you would not think about it. It's no longer knowledge to you. It's simply a part of you. You would answer reflexively, 1 + 1 = 2. It's a part of you. If it's not a part of you, that's a problem. And that's why we say that a child who has difficulty learning and integrating the material, we have to teach him how to learn. That's a learning disability. Because everybody should have the ability to integrate that knowledge to become one with the knowledge. That's what Das is. So Chochma is that exciting flash of discovery. I don't know what it is. The possibilities are endless. I've pulled myself back to acknowledge the possibility that there's more. In Bina, I pull myself back even further. Let's see what it can actually become. In Das, I've not pulled myself back anymore. I've become one with that knowledge. In Das, it goes from being a subject to being you. And that's why the Torah is described as Torah's Chaim. Remember, what was the definition of life? Life, when it joins with another life, always gives birth to a third life, which is in turn capable of creating another life. Torah is not a subject. It cannot be studied like math or science. Because the nature of Torah is much more than that. It's something that I have to have an intimate relationship with. It's something that I can connect to in the way that my life can connect to something else. And the same way that I can join my life with my wife and with my children, on an even higher level, I can join my life with the source of all life, which is Hashem. And Hashem's will is expressed, His life is expressed in the Torah. So that by knowing the Torah, I and the Torah become one. And it's no longer a subject. It now becomes my reality. And therefore, it's not about being koveya itim la Torah, as people often say, I'm koveya itim, I learn an hour a day. That's not what koveya itim la Torah means. Koveya itim la Torah means established that the bedrock of my day revolves around Torah. Asei Torah slakva, umalachtecha arai. Your work fits around that schedule. They tell a story, I heard this week from my Rav, they tell a story. I think it was when Rav Chaim Ozer met the Chazon Ish for the first time. The Chazon Ish was yet an avreich. He was still a young married man. His wife ran a store. You guys were in shul for this? His wife ran a store. I'm not sure if the Rav said it Friday night or Shabbos day. His wife ran a store. So when the Chazon Ish was asked by Rav Chaim Ozer, what do you do? He said, I'm a shopkeeper. He said, I'm a shopkeeper. A very humble answer. Even though the truth is that the Chazon Ish was never in the store. His wife ran the store. So Rav Chaim Ozer said to him, tell me, do you learn? So he answered, when I have time. Now, ultimately, Rav Chaim Ozer found out who the Chazon Ish was. But when the Chazon Ish said, when I have time, it was different than the time that we say, when I have time. When I have time means, if I get some time, so I learn a little bit. The Chazon Ish said, when I have time, means, whenever I have time, I learn. It's the bedrock, it's the foundation, it's the basis of my entire life. Because I've joined together with it. Like in a healthy family, the father is not constantly running away from the family. Obviously everybody needs to take breaks. But there is a fine line and there is a subtlety between taking breaks and running away from your children. It's important sometimes to take a break and to go play, you know, a game of basketball, a round of golf, you know, whatever it is that gets you chilled out. But at some point, when you start to see what's really going on, you see that the father is really running away from his children. He's doing everything he can not to spend time with them. So when he is with his children, what are his children experiencing? He doesn't really want to be here, but he has to be. Because otherwise he's not a quote-unquote good father. And what does the child feel? The child feels tremendously resentful. Why does my father not want to be with me? So too when it comes to the Torah. When it comes to the Torah, our baseline is that I want to be with you. I want to discover what you have to say. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam is so important to us that when he comes to us, we say, Nasa v'nishma. You've got something, I want it. Now let me learn what it is that you have. When the Ribbono Shel Olam came to us and he said, I have a Torah, we said, we want it. Because you are part of the fabric of our life. So it's not like people say, well, when I leave yeshiva, I don't see myself learning all the time. Of course when you leave yeshiva, you're not going to learn all the time. You're going to have additional responsibilities. You're going to have a responsibility to your wife. You're going to have a responsibility to your children. You're going to have to make a parnasa to provide for them in a meaningful way. So of course you're not going to learn all the time. But you are going to learn when you have the time. In the real, authentic way of saying when you have the time. Because that's das. I've become one with you. And many times the reason why we have trouble accessing this part, and the last thing we want to do is learn, is because we have not yet achieved this state of das. We may have discovered the Ribbono Shel Olam in Chachma. We may still be in the process of Bina, of let's see what this relationship could become. But das, intimacy, that we may not have yet achieved. And that is the goal, V'yadata es Hashem. The goal is to achieve das, achieve intimacy through knowledge. So once the information is assimilated inside of me in das, it's no longer information. It's part of the way that I see the world. And in fact, if something would come along and it would be keneged, it would be the opposite of the way that I understand something, that would throw me. It might even have an emotional consequence inside of me because I don't understand that. Because the das is so integrated inside of me that I can't conceive of anything else. So it's like the first time when you tell Talmidim the truest concept of Ein Od Milvado, that we are only figments of the Ribbono Shel Olam's imagination. You have to see the reaction on a Talmud's face when he learns this. What, you mean to say that I don't exist? Why does that bother him? Because his existence is not a subject to him, it's not information to him, but it's part of the core aspect of his being. And the Torah cannot be information to us. Because the Torah is a mission, and the mission needs to be part of everything that we do. Like the soldier who's going into dangerous territory. He doesn't have crypt notes that he looks at and he studies, okay, now I have to enter into room X, and from there that's going to lead into room Y. He spent so much time before he entered into the mission, understanding every detail of the mission, that he could do it in his sleep. And that's why we talk about that the measure of greatness in your Talmud Torah is that if somebody would wake you up in the middle of the night and start talking to you about the sugya, that you could respond. Because it's become a part of the fiber of your being. And this is one of the reasons that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Shelo berchu b'Torah t'chilo. They did not make berchas HaTorah. What does that mean that they didn't make Berchas HaTorah? It means that to them it was merely an intellectual subject. Make a bracha on it to recognize the godliness of Torah, which by the way is one of the dinim of Berchas HaTorah, as Moshe and I learned this Shabbos, that one of the dinim of Berchas HaTorah is that it should be a matir, the same way that I need to make a bracha on food. First I need to make sure I'm not stealing it, so I have to make a bracha. That's called the Berchas HaMatir. But then there's another part of Berchas HaTorah. Berchas HaTorah is that I learn Torah with an accompanying bracha. That my Torah is not just an intellectual experience, but it's an encounter with the divine. That the Ribbono Shel Olam himself is here. That's why we are always mekabel the Torah anew, and specifically on Shavuos. We're renewing the vows of our marriage, so to speak. We're coming back to that anniversary when we were mekabel the Torah. And there is something very chashuv about taking your wife out on your anniversary. There's something very chashuv about saying, on this day was the day that I committed to being with you for the rest of my life. On this day you stopped being my girlfriend. You stopped being just another girl. Now you became a wife. And we together have merged to a greater truth called marriage. I'm debating whether or not I should tell this story, which always means when I say that out loud, I'm going to tell the story. But on my first anniversary, my father had tickets to the NBA championships. And because I was a rookie, I made the mistake of going to the NBA championships. I said to my wife, what difference does it make? So we'll go out to eat. Instead of going out on Sunday, we'll go out on Monday. Why is that so hurtful? Because I prioritized, don't worry, I've since made up for it, yeah? Believe me, I've had to have it paid back in spades, yeah? It's one of those things I never lived down. Pay attention, I don't want you to make the same mistake, Moshe, yeah? It's because what I was really saying was my commitment to you is not as great as my commitment to the NBA. And when you're joined with something in the most intimate of ways, that naturally has the highest priority. So what happens when I enter into a conflict? The choice is obvious. I heard from Rav Moshe Weinberger. He told a maisa about a kid who had joined West Point. And he was planning on becoming a career soldier. And they were talking about that their mission was going to be to go to the Mideast, and they were going to be on a peacekeeping mission between the Israelis and the Arabs. And their general was saying how we're here on a peacekeeping mission, we don't expect to have to shoot anybody. If you have to shoot, obviously you want to start shooting over their heads, but if you have to shoot, ultimately you have to shoot. And there was this Jewish kid who raised his hand and he said to the general, I'm sorry, I cannot shoot a Jew. And the general said, well, let's pretend we didn't hear that. And the kid said, he was persistent, he said, he wasn't an Orthodox kid. He was a very secularized kid. And he said, I'm sorry, I have to be honest and upfront with you. I'm not going to be able to do this. And of course, he was court-martialed, and he had to explain to the court that as a Jew, he would not be able to kill another Jew. And the court decided to give him an honorable discharge. And he came home to his family in Texas, and they said to him, why did you do that? Why didn't you just keep your mouth shut? Nobody would have noticed. Everybody else is shooting. You shoot up in the air. They're not going to know that you missed on purpose. A couple days later, he told his parents that he was going to Israel. And his parents said, why? He said, I need to know why I answered that question by saying that I couldn't shoot another Jew. To this secular Jew who was not observant at all, it was obvious to him, in the most natural of ways, that he could not kill another Jew. He may not have been observant, but he was very religious. And because he was religious, even though he was totally secular, because he was in a relationship with Hashem, not because he had ever acted upon that relationship with Hashem before, he may not have even known that there's such a thing called tefillin. I saw that Lisa Kudrow, her son was involved in a drive-by bar mitzvah, she called it. That her son was walking along in the mall and some Chabad guys pulled him over and said, psst, are you Jewish? He said, yeah. They said, have you ever been bar mitzvah? No, they gave him a bar mitzvah right there in the mall. They took a selfie and sent it to his mom. And she's talking about it on Conan O'Brien. This kid may not have even known that there was such a thing called a bar mitzvah. And yet by him, his das, his knowledge, his innate knowledge in this case, the true innate knowledge of simple faith, demanded that there was no way that he couldn't speak up and tell his commanding officer that I'm not going to shoot another Jew. He couldn't just be quiet about that. It was obvious to him. When confronted with the choice of which way do we go, you have to understand that the only reason you are experiencing a choice is because there's a lack of intimacy. So in extreme situations, when things become clear to us, like if a Nazi would walk into this room right now and put a gun to your head, and he would say, spit on that Sefer Torah, and if you're standing in front of 10 people, you would say, kill me. But that doesn't mean that the rest of the time you're going to be the greatest Jew ever. In fact, you might revert afterwards and not be Shomer Torah Mitzvahs at all. But in that moment, you won't spit on that Sefer Torah. Because in that moment, you've accessed the deepest level of Das that you have, which is that you are in a relationship with Hashem. Now, what does Hashem want? Does Hashem want you to lose yourself in the relationship? No, chas v'shalom. Sometimes when people surrender so much, they actually lose themselves, and then they're not in a relationship at all. So that's like the husband who says to his wife, I give in to you all the time. I never ask for anything. Why are you so upset at me? You ever have that? I don't know. Why are you upset at me? I never ask for anything. Why? We've all heard this from our dads before. This is the like classic thing that dads say to moms. What did I do? I do everything you want. Why does it bother the wife when the husband doesn't ask for anything? Because what does the wife want? She wants to engage the husband. Sometimes we lose ourselves so much that it stops being us. And the Rebbeinu Shalom doesn't want that. What the Rebbeinu Shalom wants is called double oneness. Double oneness means I retain my identity. That's why the Rebbeinu Shalom created us as other than Him. It's why He gave us free choice. And then what He wants from us is to surrender that free choice in the service of Him. Because that's what it means to be in a relationship. I have wants, I have needs, and I communicate those wants and needs to Hashem. Not because I'm using Hashem in an idolatrous fashion so that I can get whatever I want, but because the nature of the relationship demands that I tell the Rebbeinu Shalom what's bothering me so that He can be in a relationship with us. And at the same time, just because I have wants and needs doesn't mean that I prioritize those wants and needs over my spouse. I might want to go to that game. I might want to go hang out with my buddies, but right now my wife needs me. So the reason why learning is so important, the reason why there's a minig on Shavuos to stay up the entire night, the reason why we constantly have to be mekabura, is because we're developing that relationship with Hashem, that relationship of double oneness, because with knowledge comes intimacy.